is now coming in to speak with you. My name is Ukwala, and I am a member of the Havasupai tribe from the Grand Canyon. The ways in which we honor this Mother Earth is to allow for Great Spirit to speak. We as a two-legged form simply allow that speak to be heard within this journey of our human step. Feel that sound, see the beauty, the colors, the textures, the sounds, the smells. Spirit is in grand communications. Let those communications awaken within you so that you then can become that vessel of spirit. And you will begin to speak of spirit in the way that is good. The journey begins today. Listen to what you are feeling in the heart. Call upon those dream visions. Call upon those memories. Awaken them. Begin this journey anew. Love that you are you, and love that you are unique, and know that what has been given you at your birthing is what you need to fulfill in this time of spirit awakening. The callings are there and will continue to call you. React to that. Allow for your response to be always in the positive. Spirit speaks to you. And ordinary things that represent and present themselves in extraordinary ways are the speak of spirit. Our language, speak from the heart. Let the languages be many. The language of silence, the language of word.
Speak of spirit. And that was Elder Ukwala with his famous, what do you call that? Talk? Spiritual talk in Sedona, Arizona. And this is at the end of this show, this episode for Rose City Native Radio for this awesome, beautiful summer day, the first day of September of this year, 2022. So many twos and 10. And my name is Ender Black. It was a pleasure to be here. And remember, very important, if you want to participate in Rose City Native Radio as a host, as a content creator, anything, it's simple. Just shoot an email to publicaffairs@kboo.fm. publicaffairs@kboo.fm. Thank you so much for being part of this great, great community radio station and what we're doing here, trying to broadcast important things. In this case, Native American spiritual things for the new age. Let's go. Yeah.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors is delighted to invite all KBOO members to the annual membership meeting and Board of Directors elections. The meeting will be held on Saturday, September 17th at 1 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. A Zoom link and call-in access will be provided to those who are unable to attend in person. This is the opportunity for all members to meet the candidates, get station updates, and make their voices heard. Again, that's KBOO's annual membership meeting and Board of Directors elections, Saturday, September 17th at 1 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/meeting2022.
This is Jeb. Joining me here in the air studio is Carolyn Black Hunt with Rick, but Carolyn's going to be the one talking to us today. She's got a short story for us, and Carolyn, say hi. Let's see how we can hear each other.
Bonjour, quai quai. Hello, everyone. How are you all today?
And your story is called?
The story that I'm going to be sharing with you today is How We Got Stars.
Nice. That's terrific.
Yeah, it's a nice little small story, but it's a good story.
And what's the story behind the story on this one? Did you learn this from someone else?
I did. It's actually in print in a early 1970s elementary school Scholastic magazine.
Oh.
My sister came across it at a yard sale and saw that there was a Native story in there, and she bought it for me for a quarter and gave it to me for my birthday.
Don't you love those yard sales?
Yeah.
Isn't it great?
When my sister's a cheap shopper, but she gets her money's worth.
Yeah, terrific. So of what tradition is this from?
It doesn't really give that information.
Mm-hmm.
I have adapted it a little bit to make it a Gluskwomba story.
Uh-huh.
I've taken some liberties with it that way and edited for myself for the Northeast region. But it's a story that doesn't really have a specific area that it would have to belong to.
And this character, Gluskwomba, that you talk about,
Tell
us a little bit about this character.
Well, Gluskwomba, whose name means he who made himself, was the first of the two-leggeds to walk upon the earth. He was here before the human beings were here. And because he made himself, and Creator was quite all impressed with that, because he made himself from the leftovers of what Creator was making the world from, and as he brushed the dust off his hands, that dust had the gift of life from Creator's hand still in it, and that life couldn't be negated, and everything kind of swirled and twisted around, and this being was formed and became Gluskwomba. So as Creator went off to do other Creator things, he left Gluskwomba here on this earth to oversee the planet, to finish and refine Creator's work, to create more plants and animals as needed, and to teach the people how to live well upon the land and make sure that everyone, furred, feathered, finned, and two-legged, cooperated with one another so that everyone could live well together.
All right.
And he's sort of the hero of the Abenaki people. He teaches them lessons. He plays tricks on them to teach them lessons sometimes. And over the generations, as he's taught everyone everything they can pretty much learn, he decided he was going to retire, and he took his grandmother, who's such a good cook, his Nugami, and disappeared from the land where he's in retirement. You'll hear some people refer to him as Gluskap or Gluskabe.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Gluskabe is actually a past tense version of the name Gluskwomba, meaning he has been but is no longer. I prefer Gluskwomba because it's the present tense.
Yeah.
And he's still here.
Yeah.
He's still out there.
Right.
He's still a being in existence rather than something of the past.
Uh-huh.
And I don't like the idea of him being a historic relic.
Yeah.
He's such a dynamic character in the Abenaki history and pantheon of stories that I think it's important to keep him alive.
Yeah.
And if little kids, it's sort of like Santa, only you can use them all year long. You know, if you're not behaving yourself, Gluskwomba's watching you. He's going to come, teach you a lesson here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
That's a good one. All right. And joining us here in the Air Studio is our silent partner, Josh. So you must know some of these stories firsthand with a mom who has used these stories. If you have anything to share, you're welcome to step right up to the mic. Well, Carolyn, I'm going to sit back and enjoy the story.
Okay.
All right.
And here we go. This is the story of how we got stars. In the long time ago, in the far, far distant past, we had grandfather's son who lived in the sky during the day. And grandfather's son is very reliable. He's always up in the morning. He's always out and about doing his job. And then the evening, he goes to bed as we need to go to bed. Grandmother Moon, however, is a different character altogether. She rules the night sky, but she tends to be a bit moody and isn't always out in the night sky at convenient times or the same times. And on the nights that she doesn't feel like coming out at all, the sky was very, very dark because Grandmother Moon was the only light that shone in the nighttime sky. And Gluskwomba and the birds and the animals and the fish would all stumble around and bang into one another and trip over things because they could not see. And Gluskwomba was thinking to himself one day, I don't think Grandmother Moon's going to be out tonight. She seems to be in another mood. We're going to have to get our things done during the daylight hours, as we won't be able to see what we're doing tonight. There must be some way that we can create light for the nighttime sky that is always there and that is reliable.
but not so bright that Grandmother Moon would take offense. And Glooskomba pondered long and hard about what he could put in the night sky that would be beneficial to all the creatures of the land, but not anger Grandmother Moon, that would give enough light for them to see by, but not outshine her. What could he make such a thing from? Fire was too bright. Fire belongs to Grandfather Sun. That would never do. It had to be something that could belong to Grandmother Moon and her alone, as she would be proud to share her sky with. But what could it be made of? And Glooskomba pondered this question long and hard, and he searched far and wide upon the land, upon Mother Earth, seeking an answer to this question. He talked to the animals and to the birds and to the fish, and none of them had any ideas of what he could possibly use. And as he was thinking about the response to this question, he was walking through the forest, and he was deep, deep in the woods, so deep that Grandfather Sun's light could barely penetrate through the leaves and the needles of the trees, and it was quite dark and dim. And as he's walking along, he noticed a little white spark down on the ground in all the dark green leaves. And it caught his eye, and he thought, wow, that is quite bright, but not too bright. That might be just what I need. And he bent down to look closer, and when he parted the leaves, he found a small, five-petaled flower, shining white with almost its own light, glowing in the darkness of the forest. And Glooskomba looked at this flower and said, oh, little flower, you are just what I have been looking for. Are there more of you around? And he looked around, and he looked around, but right in the immediate area of this flower, there were no more of its kind, just that one sitting there. And as Glooskomba stepped back from this flower and he looked further out into the forest, he saw another spark of white over there. And he saw another spark of white in that direction, and another spark of white behind him. And while these little flowers did not grow close together, when he stepped back and looked at the forest, there were a great many of them scattered through the trees as far as he could see. He just had to know how to look for them. And asking permission of the flowers, telling them of what great things he would do with them in the night sky, Glooskomba picked only every other flower, and he put them in the bag that he carried over his shoulder with his magic bag, this bag that no matter what you put in it was never ever full and never ever heavy. We should all have a purse like that. And so Glooskomba began to pick every other flower, because if he picked them all, there would be none left to grow back again, and they would be gone forever. So he took only what was needed from that area, and then he went in search for other dark places in the forest where other five-petaled white flowers grew. And when he found them, he sang to them and asked them if they would like to join the flowers he'd already picked and be placed in the night sky to give light to the world. And he picked every other flower. And this took a long, long time for him to nearly fill the bag that could not be filled with all these tiny little five-petaled flowers. And after many, 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 many moons of tramping the land, tramping through the forest and picking flowers, Glooskomba felt that maybe at last he had enough to get started with. And he thought long and hard about how he would place them in the night sky so that when Grandmother Moon came out and saw them, she would be dazzled by their beauty. Not just their brightness. He wanted to make a beautiful pattern like beadwork that would be pleasing to her eye. And he spent almost as much time thinking about the pattern as he had about what to put in the night sky to start with. And as he was traveling along, he decided on a pattern. When he was thinking, how do I get them up into the sky? It is so far, and even though I can make myself very, very tall, it is still a long ways away. And here in the east, we have some very, very tall mountains. And he climbed to the top of Agiochuk, which we call Mount Washington now. And while Mount Washington was very high, It wasn't quite close enough to the sky for Gluskomba to reach easily. And so Gluskomba climbed down Agyochuk, and he went further to the east to another big mountain, the mountain called Katahdin. And he climbed to the top of that mountain, but still, the sky was not quite close enough, even though that mountain was also very tall. And so Gluskomba came down from the slopes of Mount Katahdin, and he thought, I need a mountain that is much higher than these. I seem to remember some made of rocks far to the west of here. I think that is where I will go. And so Gluskomba left the land of the east, and he walked across the land to the great river that split the country in two. And then he walked across the wide, flat area on the other side of the river and went to where the mountains are tall and bare, just bare rock. And there he climbed to the highest peak, the peak that we now call Pike's Peak. And he went to the very, very top. And he thought, yes, here, the sky is close enough that I can reach. But Grandfather's son is still in the sky and will be there for quite a while longer. I have some time to kill before darkness comes and Grandmother Moon will be hiding. I think what I'll do is I'll just sit here at the top of this mountain and wait for Grandfather's son to go to bed. And that's what he did. And he sat down and he leaned his back against the rocky outcrop at the top of the mountain. And with Grandfather's son shining warm on his face and warm on his shoulders and his body feeling tired from the long search of the flowers and the long journey to the west, Gluskomba fell asleep. And while he was sleeping, there was an animal moving about just down the slope from him, an animal that lives only in the west, an animal that is known for being a trickster and for being sneaky. This animal was the coyote. And Coyote was scurrying about looking for something to eat, because being a dog, he travels on his stomach. Everything he smells makes him think of food. Every time he thinks of food, his stomach growls. Every time his stomach growls, he needs to eat. And so Coyote was scampering here and there, looking for critters to eat, but the critters saw him coming, the rabbits and the pikas and the ferrets and the groundhogs and the prairie dogs, and they all hid on Coyote, and poor Coyote was so hungry he could smell them all. And the smell of them all made his tummy rumble, and his tummy rumbled. He grew hungrier and hungrier and hungrier. And he was making his way slowly up the mountain where Gluskomba had gone. And he got pretty close before he realized there was somebody sleeping at the top of that mountain. And he looked close and he said, oh, my good friend Gluskomba is here in the west again. It's been a long time since he last visited. I think I will go and see him, because he lives with his Nugami, his grandmother. And whenever Gluskomba travels about the land, she always packs him lots of good food to keep him full while he travels about. And Gluskomba, being such a good friend, always shares with me when he sees me. I think I will go and visit my friend Gluskomba and help him lighten the load of the food that Nugami has given him, because that's the kind of friend I am. And so Coyote slowly came up and approached Gluskomba, but as he got closer, he realized that Gluskomba's eyes were closed. And as he got closer still, he could hear a faint snoring coming from Gluskomba. And he realized Gluskomba was asleep. And he looked at his sleeping friend, thinking, how can he share his lunch with me if he's sleeping? When he looked and noticed beside Gluskomba was the bag that Gluskomba always carried, laying on the ground next to him. And that bag, the bag that is never ever full, the bag that Gluskomba carries all that good food in, looked pretty full to Coyote. And Coyote thought, oh, too bad Gluskomba is sleeping. It looks like Nugami has given him lots of food. Too much food for him to eat. As a matter of fact, Gluskomba probably has already eaten his lunch and was so full from all the food Nugami has given him that it put him to sleep and he could not finish all that food. And I know if my good friend Gluskomba was awake, he would certainly share what he had with me. I think I will do my sleeping friend a favor. Since there is too much food in his bag for him to eat, and there's so much food that every time he eats it puts him to sleep, I will help him. I will take some of that food that Nugami gave him that's too much for him to eat, and I will take it with me, so that he does not have to struggle to force it down his throat, and he does not have to struggle to carry it around until he is hungry again, because I'm sure he's eaten so much he won't be hungry for a while, and he'll have to carry that food all over the land. Yes, that's what I will do, because I am a good friend of Gluskomba. I'm going to take some of his food and lighten his load and make life easy for my good friend, who would share with me if he was awake. And having convinced himself that this was the right thing to do, Coyote started to approach the bag. But he wanted to be careful not to awaken his friend Gluskomba, because obviously he traveled far to come to the western land, and he had eaten far too much food that had put him to sleep. And Coyote did not want to wake his good friend from his long day of walking and eating. And so he crept up to that bag as quietly as a coyote can creep. And he grabbed that bag with his teeth just to pull it a little ways away from Gluskomba so he would not wake up his friend when he took all that extra heavy food out of the bag. And as he pulled the bag away, his tummy started to growl. And when Coyote's tummy started to growl, it made him hungrier and hungrier. And all he could think about was all that good food that Nugami had made just waiting for him inside that bag that is never, ever full. And he thought, I think I will have myself a good meal. What I don't eat, I will bring back to Gluskomba. He won't even know the difference. His bag is so full. And I'm sure Nugami has made him so much food, he won't notice what a coyote will eat is missing. And Coyote dragged that bag further away and further away. And as he dragged that bag further away, Grandfather's sun was sinking deep, deep into the sky. And the bright blue of the day was fading to the dark blue of the night. And darkness was coming. And Coyote was still creeping backwards down the mountain, dragging that bag with his teeth. And when he thought he was far enough away from Gluskomba that he would not awaken his friend, he picked that bag up in his teeth and he ran down the mountain. And by now it was nearly full dark, and because Grandmother Moon was not out, there was no light for him to see where he was going. And in the shadows and in the darkness, as Coyote ran, he tripped over a tree root that was sticking out of the ground. And when he tripped on that root, the root reached out and snagged that bag that was hanging from Coyote's mouth, and the bag ripped open. And with the momentum of the speed of Coyote's run and the speed and momentum of the bag ripping open down the mountain, all the little star flowers that had been inside were released and were thrown and scattered willy-nilly across the night sky as it became full dark. And once they were there, there they were. And just at that moment, Gluskomba, laying on the rock at the top of the mountain, got a chill because Grandfather's sun was no longer shining on him. And that chill woke him up. And he looked up at the night sky after he rubbed his eyes, and he saw all these little lights scattered in no particular order all across the sky. And they cast enough light that Gluskomba could see. And when he looked around, he saw that his bag was missing. And when he looked further around, he saw down the slope his bag torn open and hanging on a tree root. And right next to that bag, he saw the hulking figure of Coyote trying to shrink himself down behind the tree root, looking at him with great big eyes. And Gluskomba knew what had happened. And he stormed down the mountain and he said, Coyote, what have you done? You have stolen my bag and you have ripped it open. Do you know what you have done? And Coyote just looked at Gluskomba with great big eyes and tried to make himself even smaller still behind that tree root holding the torn bag. But Gluskomba was so angry, he did not even notice Coyote was trying to hide. And he came down upon Coyote and he said, Coyote, do you know how long it took me to find and pick all of those tiny little flowers to fill my bag that can never be full? Do you know how long I have been working and thinking of how I was going to put those in the night sky so that when Grandmother Moon comes back, she will be pleased with what we have done. I had the most beautiful pattern. I was going to put all these little star flowers in. And now I can't do it, because now that they are up there, I cannot take them back and reposition them. You have made a complete mess out of everything. When Grandmother Moon decides to come back in the night sky and she sees what a mess you've made, we're both going to hear about it. And poor Coyote could only look at Gluskomba with a rumbling belly and great big eyes. And he felt so sad and so ashamed of what he had done. He turned his nose up to the sky to look, really look at the great big mess he had made. And he felt so bad that he started to howl. Oh! 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 And to this very day, when Grandmother Moon decides not to come out, and the only light in the night sky are those little star flowers that are scattered across the universe, the grandchildren of the grandchildren of grandchildren of the grandchildren of Coyote look up, and they see the stars, and they see the mess that was left by their great-great-great-great-great-grandfather Coyote, and they feel his shame, and they feel his sadness, and they turn their noses up to the sky, and they howl. And that is the story of how we got stars.
Oh, what a great story.
Isn't that a wonderful story?
Oh, I love your storytelling, Carolyn.
Thank you.
So wonderful. Oh, and Rick, you must have heard this a number of times, but you seem to enjoy it every time.
She does it differently each time.
Uh-huh.
It's
amazing.
It's
a little different every time I tell it. Yeah.
So great. And of course, this storytelling is such a tradition.
It is.
In our indigenous cultures. And it's so wonderful that you've found ways to share Abenaki stories as well as adapt them to the characters that you know are of Abenaki origin and stuff. Good for you.
But there's some good lessons in the story.
Yeah.
And this is a great story for the elementary schools that we go to, especially when we're doing the younger grade, like kindergarten through fourth grade. They really, really love this story.
Mm-hmm.
And they really, surprisingly, they really identify with Coyote.
Right.
And we're, you know, it's like, well, what do you think about Coyote's behavior? Well, yeah, he shouldn't have done this, but this is why he did it. They always have an excuse for Coyote.
Isn't that funny?
But they do learn, you know, when you ask them, you know, what do you think about what Coyote did? Oh, well, he was absolutely wrong. So why do you think he was wrong? Well, he was wrong because of this. But this is why he did it. And it's like, well, do you think that made it okay? Well, no, but you shouldn't punish Coyote. He's just a dog anyway.
Aww.
So they always come to his defense. But they understand the story, and it touches them in the heart.
Yeah.
Which is what the stories are supposed to do, because that's how they get remembered.
Right.
And then, you know, and as I tell the kids, you know, as the stories touch you and they stay with you, and someday, you're going to tell this story to another child, or to your own child,
yes,
or to a grandchild, or even to your parents mm-hmm. or grandparents. That makes you a storyteller, too.
Right.
And that's how the stories have survived. You know, our people have been here, you know, according to the archaeologists, we've been here for 12,000 years. According to us, we've been here forever. We were put here specifically by Creator. This is where we were supposed to be. This is why we're here. And we didn't have written language the way that the Europeans have written language. We didn't have an alphabet. And the way the stories were continued was from one person to another. They were the school. They were the education of the people.
Mm-hmm.
They taught the people how to be and how not to be and how to live well with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And examples like Coyote were, you know, why you shouldn't misbehave and what happens because of it. And because the stories are passed on from one person to the next, because it's touched them in the heart, the stories live.
Yes.
You know, and the stories are just out there waiting to have a voice. And I've been blessed and honored to be chosen to be that voice,
to be
one of the voices.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I try to honor that as well as I can, and I have a lot of fun with it. And
yeah.
And it's we've always been well-received everywhere we've gone.
Yeah.
because people want to hear stories.
Yes.
And it's funny because especially in the schools, I think sometimes the teachers get more engrossed in the stories than the kids do.
I love
which is
them.
Wonderful. Yeah.
It reminds me so much, too, of using music in that mm-hmm. way, of
yes.
sharing stories and feelings. And
mm-hmm.
and I know music is a healer and can bring you change your moods and
yes.
rise up your energy, and it's just
yeah.
wonderful. And you do this same thing with storytelling.
Thank you.
I really love it. And I'm hoping that Carolyn and Rick will come back again over the mountain, over the river.
Yeah, we're not too far away.
Not too far away. And I really appreciate that you filling in today, being
yeah.
spontaneous.
Yeah, well, we figured we were here. Why not? And I always have the opportunity. And if I've got an opportunity yeah. to talk, I'll take it.
Great. You need to think about radio broadcasting.
Well, I have, sort of, but I don't know if I can. I don't know.
Well, you're welcome to sit in with me anytime you're in the area.
Thank you. That's
really
an honor.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I'll give you your voice a little rest. And thanks again, Rick, for accompanying, and Josh for being here, too. And it's so nice to meet you, Josh. Yep. And can't wait to see you at the next powwow dancing, right?
Yep. Well, it'll be a while from now.
Yeah. Yeah. You do the fancy years. Dancing? Is that your...
No, I do Eastern Woodland.
Okay.
Traditional dancing.
Okay. Yeah.
But college and all that stuff's kind of keeping me back. So
yeah.
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 For a while.
Okay.
Yeah, he's going to be on a different path for a little while.
Okay.
Yeah, it's taking him out of state.
Yeah.
For a couple of years at least.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
And thank you so much again, you guys.
Thank you.
This is Rick Hunt, and you are listening to Moccasin Tracks. Thank you for listening to Moccasin Tracks. We have a lineup of wonderful music today. You just listened to a beautiful story, How the Stars Were Made, told by Carolyn Black Hunt about 6 years ago. We are quite honored to have Carolyn as a co-host. And she does an amazing job of selecting cuts for our program. That being said, here is Deb Rieger.
And thank you, Rick. Thank you, Carolyn, for sharing that story on Moccasin Tracks.
Yes.
And we really appreciate the technology that we can bring it forward to today. So we really enjoy your stories. And we played, some time ago, stories that were read by folks last summer, your own stories that you had written down some years ago. And we'll bring some of those back, too, because I really appreciate the people that read the stories. And perhaps we'll be able to do another session soon of traditional stories told by Carolyn Black Hunt. And all the traditional stories, of course, are like they change over time, and it depends on the storyteller what they sound like today. They may be traditional, but they have the flavor of whoever is the storyteller repeating those stories. I want to tell you that Moccasin Tracks is being broadcast from the traditional ancestral homeland of the Western Abenaki peoples, who have lived in this area for more than 12,000 years. It is known as Ndakina, the land of the people of the dawn, and we also call it today New Hampshire. We acknowledge and honor the people who still have a spiritual and cultural connection to this land. And I want to thank you for tuning in to Moccasin Tracks today with our co-host Rick Hunt, Carolyn Black Hunt, and myself, Deb Rieger. So thank you so much. We picked out a lot of what we consider classical Native American music by the likes of Floyd, Red Crow, Westerman, John Trudell, and some of the folks that are still with us today but have learned from those oldsters.
like Keith Cicola, and we have a little bit of Paul Ortega also. So here we go with a little bit from Floyd Red Crow Westerman.
You invite the red man to sit at your table and be your guest, to justify the guilt that you are feeling. And now you tell us that you like us the best, and the black man is waiting on the sideline for the chance to get into your game, to show you that he's just as good as you are, prove to you that he can be the same. And the triangle that you have created keeps you by yourself, it keeps you paranoid for the red, white, and blue that you keep flying, for the red, white, and black that you avoid. 'Cause the red man was here so long before you, while the black man was a slave you brought ashore. And the red man was killed to free a frontier, while the black man was killed for sport and nothing more. And you wonder why the red man won't be like you. You should wonder why the black will never be. 'Cause you came to this land because you wanted freedom, but that you have forgotten now that you are free. That were spoken, for the blood we have spilled, for the treaties that were broken, for the leaders you have stilled. Custer died for your sin. Custer died. Begin, just to die for yourself, for the tribes you terminated, for the myth you keep alive, for the land you confiscated, for our freedom you deprived. Custer died for your sin. Custer died for your sin. Now a new day must begin. Custer died for yourself. To die for yourself, for the truth that you pollute, for the life that you have cost, for the good you prostitute, and for all that we have lost. again. Trust or die for your step. Trust or die for your step. Trust or die for your step. Now a new day must begin. Trust or die for yourself. Trust or die.
We were. Tell you how the West was won. Gonna tell you how the West was won. In a murder style. In a murder style. Tell you how the West was won. In a murder style. In a murder style. From coast to coast, sea to sea, it all used to be Indian country. From coast to coast, sea to sea, it all used to be Indian country. They were living in tribal unity. Tierra del Fuego to the Arctic Sea. Some in the desert, some on the prairie. Some in the mountains, some in the valleys. But then one day, they met the white man, coming with a gun in his hand. All they wanted was a small piece of land. All they wanted was a small piece of land. But from coast to coast, sea to sea, they called it their manifest destiny. From coast to coast, sea to sea, they called it the manifest. So whether you're a Navajo or a Hopi, or them Sufi or Apache, tell you how the West was won. Gonna tell you how the West was won. In a murder style. In a murder style. Tell you how the West was won. Gonna tell you how the West was won. In a murder style. In a murder style.
Don't call them Indians, call them Native Americans.
Don't call them Indians.
Forced upon the reservation.
Don't call them Indians.
Call them Native Americans.
Don't call them Indians.
Juan Casper. There were these foreigners who came to take all the land. They killed men and women and even children. Destroyed all the buffalo population and tried to put my people upon their reservation. Tell you how the West was won. Gonna tell you how the West was won. In a murder style. Tell you how the West was won. In a murder style. In a murder style. From coast to coast, sea to sea, it all used to be Indian country. They were living in tribal unity. Tierra del Fuego to the Arctic Sea. And one day, they met the white man. All they wanted was a small piece of land. Tell you how the West was won. Gonna tell you how the West was won. In a murder style. Hey, tell you how the West was won. We're gonna tell you how the West was won.
All your this.
What is an Indian? During a normal working day, I answered many questions from non-Indians concerning Indians. The questions vary, and in some cases, poorly stated, but usually add up to one question. What is an Indian? They say he is a person who doesn't work, but gets a monthly check from the government. Others say that he is lazy. Still others say he's a man who got a raw deal from the government. Therefore, he deserves what he can get from the government. Also others say that he is a drunkard, will never amount to anything. So therefore, the government should terminate him and let him make his own way in the white man's society. Myself, I do not see an Indian in the same light as any of these people. I see the Indian as a group of people, all different in their ways, but held together by a common bond called culture. I see the Indian as a group who fought for what was rightfully theirs and branded as savages. I see the Indians as a group who fought courageously against overwhelming odds, and after giving in and signing a peace treaty, lived to see the treaties broken one by one. I see the Indians as an individual who, when their country was in danger, went to the front voluntarily and gave their last full measure of devotion, not only in the Civil War, but World War I, World War II, the Korean conflict, and Vietnam. I see the Indian as a group of people who are proud, and rightfully so, because they possess the secrets of life the white man has never discovered. I see the Indians as a group of people because even in their broken English, they will tell you how important it is to gain an education in this modern world. I see the Indians as people who, when they cross the culture barrier into the dominant society, become the best in their chosen profession, whether it be law, medicine, politics, trader, athletes, or fighting for freedom. And when I think of the Indian in this light, I think of the question, what is an Indian? My chest suddenly expands, and I think I am an Indian.
As a man travels, there are songs that are sung to him. They have a safe journey to where he's going and return home safe, all as one. Benanda ye vaye Yanka Yega Yeho, Junanda Ye, Junasha Yeho, Junanka Yega Yeho, Junanda Ye, Gaye, Junanda Ye, Gaye, 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 Junanda Ye, Junasha Yeho, Junanda Ye, Gaye, Junanka Ye, Gaye. On behalf of the Yakima Nation and myself, I would like to honor a man that have left this world, the late Honorable Bob Jim, who believed in the things that the Indians were doing. His belief was that the whole world should know about the Indian world, whether it be as a nation, as a tribe, or individualists. His belief was that you are born as a child to feel the things around you. You become a young warrior to learn about the things that you felt around you. You become a warrior to live by the things that you felt and learned around you. Then you fall into the world of knowledge with all the experiences that you've had. So, to us, they're known as leaders, wise men, medicine people, and chiefs. He often felt that everybody was important. Nobody was unimportant. He said in every tribe, someone would carry the burden, a man and a female. They do not quite look like everybody as normal. Some people consider them ugly. But they carry the world and the burden of all the ugliness of the nations of tribes. We make fun of them. And they live still to survive. One of his famous words were, as an Indian, stand up and be counted. With its powers, brought its gift to the people. And there were songs that were sung to him for it. It was once said, a man sung a bird song. The valleys rung and a small spring sprung. Let me see, he said, No, let it be. The man grew and the birds flew. With the valley's dew, the waters turned blue. Let me see, he said. No, let it be. Shewum, shewum, shewum. She willi kum kum ah, she willi kum ah, she willi wah.
And you are listening to Paul Ortega from Two Worlds, Three Worlds CD, put out, produced by Canyon Records, who have been producing Native American music since the late 50s. And I wanted to tell you a little bit more about A. Paul Ortega. In the early 60s, this Mescalero Apache musician created a sound that forever revolutionized the landscape of Native American music. A respected medicine man, he effortlessly fused Native American healing traditions with the gentle strum of guitar, the stomp of bass drum, and the mournful cry of harmonica. With blues-tinged vocals and storytelling that draw upon Native culture, Two Worlds, Three Worlds has gone on to become modern classics of contemporary Native American musical expression. And you are listening to The Bird Song from that CD. And I wanted to also tell you a little bit about Floyd Red Crow Westerman. He was a Dakota Sioux musician, political activist, and an actor. And after establishing a career as a country music singer, later in his life he became an actor. And he usually depicted Native American elders in films and television. And he's, as a political activist, he spoke and marched for Native American issues. He was sent to a boarding school when he was 10 and was forced to cut his long hair and forbidden to speak their native language. And this experience profoundly impacted Westerman's development and his entire musical career. So let's just listen to the rest of the Bird Song with Paul Ortega.
Time. willy come on, she willy want. She willy come come on, she willy come on, she willy want. She willy come come on, she willy come on, she willy come on, she willy want. She willy come come on, she willy come on, she willy want. She willy me lie lie tiny lie lie low. Me wily tiny. She will come come on, she will come on, she will want. She will come come on, she will come on, she will want. She will come come on, she will come on, she will want. She will.
You've been listening to Moccasin Tracks, independently produced for community radio with the Pacifica Radio Network. My name is Deb Rigger. Look to our Moccasin Tracks page on Facebook for more information, and thank you for supporting the original peoples in art and music, respect and balance.